Welcome to False Bottom Girls, a podcast about the wonderful yet sometimes confusing world of beer and brewing.
Hi, I'm Rachel Hudson, owner of Pilot Brewing and an advanced cicerone.
Hi, I'm Jen Blair, sensory expert, homebrewer, and advanced cicerone. Welcome, everyone, to False Bottom Girls. And for this episode, we have a very special guest with us. I guess before I get to that, I should say that I'm Jen. Rachel is here as well. We have our videos off right now, so you'll just have to trust me. I guess they can never see anyway. So.
Yeah. And it is odd. We have a special episode, like Jen said. We're here with Crystal, who from Bortmalt, who is out in Belgium. So our delay is very bad at the moment. So we had to turn off our videos so we can talk to each other. So
right.
It's a little odd at the moment. I'm just talking to a black screen.
But we are very excited to have Crystal Peck here with us. Like Rachel said, she is with Bortmalt. She is joining us from Belgium. So Crystal, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jen and Rachel, for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here. And yeah, you can't see, but I've been smiling throughout the introduction. I'm sorry that you all have to have your videos off because
it's okay.
Over in Belgium. So I'm in Belgium because this is actually the company for which I work, Bortmalt, is a malting company, and our headquarters is situated in the port of Antwerp in Belgium, which is why I moved to Belgium. Actually, this is where the company started, and then we have smaller sites across the world. So across all of the continents, we have a presence. But here in our headquarters, I am a product innovation manager, and here we have our innovation center. So I moved to Belgium in 2019, actually, to commission the innovation center. And I've been here so now for 4 years. And just recently, my role has kind of merged more into the creative side of new product development. And my background is in brewing here. So here I have a brew house, a 10 hectolitre brew house in barrels. I don't know what that is. Sorry.
That's okay.
Not too far off. It's just a little bit over, I think.
Okay, cool. And a laboratory. So it's kind of a combination of my background as a biologist and a brewer that here I can do both sides of.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds so fun. And where are you from originally?
Australia.
Yeah, I love the accent. That's what I'm focused on right now since I can't see you. Just listening to this beautiful Australian accent.
The dulcet tones.
And so, Crystal, you had said that you had your background is in brewing. So working for Bortmalt, was this your first step into malting?
Yeah. It was actually, although I'd already kind of was very interested in malting, and I'd already done some small scale kind of malt related things in the brewery, in the context of brewing. And also, I used to work in a brewery in Berlin, and I was brewing there. The Berliner Weisse was a style that I was producing there regularly. And So I used malt a lot in very special ways, kind of related to microbiology and mixed culture fermentations. So malt's always been a huge factor of the way that I develop recipes and the way that I operate as a brewer. Mm-hmm. I'm really like a malt forward brewer, I guess you could say. Always have been.
I love that. Yeah. So, Crystal, some of my background, I used to work for the Craft Maltsters Guild here in the United States.
Oh, wow.
And I am particularly with craft malt, but as listeners of the podcast will know, I am very much a malt girly. So, like you said, I'm a malt forward beer person.
Awesome.
And we talk about malt so much more, I feel like, than we talk about hops on here because malt deserves the spotlight.
So I love
hearing that, and I love meeting brewers who really consider malt as more than just a sugar delivery mechanism for the yeast.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I also love that your name is Crystal and you are a maltster. You work at a malt house, and we're here talking about malt. It's just, I love the irony of that.
I didn't really have a choice.
No, you didn't. You didn't.
Future was sealed.
And I feel that's a big thing, like just in Europe in general, like a lot of styles and brewers and everything, are more styles are more malt forward in Europe, whereas over here in America you have these big hop forward beers, and that is like the very much a lot of, not my specific beer culture, but very popular. You have all the IPAs going, so it is like such a, I love that you can just go over there and like, we're going to talk more about your special R&D malts, but it's very much on the forefront of malting, and you just don't, you do see new and cool stuff over here, but I don't know. It's just like such a country difference. I think it's cool.
Absolutely, but also like the hop wave is also coming to Europe slowly but surely.
Yeah, I would say I've definitely noticed that in some of like the micro breweries, like the new breweries of today over there.
But yeah, it's still grounded in its like strong Belgian styles, which is really lovely that that tradition is maintained. But also, the Belgian brewers are really kind of like starting to think outside the box in new ways as well, because historically they already were. Like, they were the first to be adding fruits to their beers and things to produce like kriek and, their spontaneous fermentation, lambics and gueuze. And now they're actually really starting to kind of produce more current innovative beer styles as well. So it's really lovely to see.
Do you have like a example of like any new cool new stuff that they're doing?
Yeah, like actually, there's a brewery here in Belgium that's very famous, based in Mechelen, and it's a beer that they have a really like a flagship beer that is incredible, an incredible beer that you can, I'm sure, get in the States. In fact, pretty sure I've seen it there. The beer is called Gulden Carolus, and I really pronounce it very badly. So I'm sorry to any any Dutch speakers who are listening to me. But it is an amazing strong beer. So this brewery has a lot of tradition, and they also have recently launched a new brew pub in Mechelen area. And in the brew pub, they're just letting their creative side like go absolutely wild. And actually made a custom infusion malt for this brewery,
Oh, cool.
and they released their annual indulgence release based on a special infusion malt. So it was a very proud moment for me, where there's this like merging of tradition with contemporary methods and approaches. So
Oh,
I love that.
how cool is that?
That's amazing. And how does the Belgian beer drinking consumer kind of react to these like newer innovations and newer like beer styles?
The Belgian beer consumer typically is very loyal to their brand, and also the brands are very local. So if you would go to Leuven, everyone is drinking the Stella Artois, which Leuven is where Stella is produced. But if you're in Antwerp, where I am, everyone is drinking Antwerp's brown ale, the Bolica. And you can't get a Bolica in Leuven, and in Antwerp, it's more difficult to find a Stella. So there really is like it's really localized what the consumers do. And like I said, they're very loyal to their brand. So if one of their favorite brands does something wild and whacked, then those supporters are totally going to absolutely love it. They're going to trust them. They're going to buy it. It's going to do extremely well.
Wow. That's cool. I do remember that going to Antwerp, having the Bolic, and it was very popular. Kind of like an,
Really? Cool.
Well, I went for we went for our honeymoon. That was our first stop in Belgium, was Antwerp. We only got like a night there. So we're gonna have to come back for sure.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. When I was in Belgium, I think I had like a day and a half in Antwerp, and Rachel and I have talked about going back because it was just such a cool city. And like she said, we didn't get to spend nearly enough time there.
Yeah, it's a wonderful city, and it's also not really on most people's radars. So it's still a little bit of a secret traveler's tip.
You're
And
not,
Saron
yeah.
in Antwerp is really just delightful. It's not too crowded. It's not like Bruges, which is
Yeah.
absolutely packed in the summer. Antwerp's still a little bit under the radar, so lovely place to visit.
Yeah, I did feel that way. I like felt like this was smaller and it wasn't crowded and you had your special spots, but it wasn't like it just felt like really like kind of just a small little quaint city. And it was an easy gateway city, I feel like. I think we came there on like a high speed train to get into Belgium from like Amsterdam.
Oh
So it was
yeah.
a nice easy way to get there.
It is good connections, really good connections.
So tell us a bit more about, we've thrown out the word infusion malt here a couple times, and obviously I know what's going on and I love it, but explain to our listeners what you are doing over there with this awesome R&D program of yours.
Absolutely cool. Yeah. So infusion malts are actually an innovative approach to malting, whereby I took this idea of brewing these creative beers, which I've always brewed, where I've incorporated other raw ingredients into the brewing process to produce, for example, a spiced Christmas ale or a fruited Berliner Weisse, etc., etc. I've always done this with beers because I just love to create layered, complex beers without losing balance. And then when I started working in a malt house with the Innovation Centre, here we have the capability to do very, very small volumes of malting in our micro malting facilities. And so I started playing with this idea of incorporating other raw ingredients into the malting process. So maybe your listeners are aware of the malting process to an extent, but in a very simple overview of the malting process, there are three stages to the malting process. There is the steep phase, which is a water immersion phase, and with this steep phase, we're essentially simulating springtime. So this raw barley plant, let's say barley, although it's not limited only to barley. We also malt wheat, we malt rye, sorghum, other cereals as well that are able to grow, but usually it's barley. So the steep phase rehydrates this barley kernel, so the moisture is increased, and that would simulate the embryo to start to tap into its starchy reserves to transform the starch into sugar and grow into a plant. However, in the malt house, after the steeping phase, so the moisture levels increase to about 45%, and then we remove the water and we germinate the grain. And germination is a humidity-controlled, temperature-controlled environment where the enzymes are synthesized and activated, and this basically the protein matrix of the endosperm starts to get broken down to reveal and to like make accessible these starch granules for the embryo to start growth. So after germination, we pause this entire process with the kilning phase, which is where we dry the grain back down to a moisture level that is conducive to storage, and we also introduce color through these Maillard reactions, which are occurring. And that is how we get these beautiful malty flavors. Malt is the best in the world. So I started incorporating these raw ingredients into these three phases of the malting process, raw ingredients like herbs or spices or botanicals. And what I discovered very quickly was that flavor and aroma compounds from these other raw ingredients were actually getting into the embryo and incorporating themselves into the endosperm of that cereal, that grain, and creating these incredibly nuanced, complex malt varieties. It's, which was, I mean, yeah, a mind-blowing discovery for me. And I then started experimenting with anything and everything you could ever imagine.
How cool is that?
Yeah. It was really exciting. And since then, of course, because this was all like really early on in my time here in the company, since then I've learned so much. I've started research projects with a very renowned research institute here in Leuven. And we've done a lot of like gas chromatography, mass spec, and we've really gotten really geeky about this because we love to get a bit geeky. My boss and I are both scientists, and we collaborate with research institutes all the time for our projects. So,
Oh my
no, we've learned
gosh.
an abundance of stuff about these
Oh
infusion
my
malts.
gosh. I said I wasn't going to go anywhere this summer, but Jen, we might need to go check all this out.
I know, I
I need to
agree.
see the malt house. I need to see the research facility. I need to see everything. It's so cool. I wish you could see my face right now, because I've been over here geeking out the whole time you've been talking. I just think it's all so amazing.
You're always welcome, Rach. Like,
Oh,
seriously, you
perfect.
guys are always welcome to come and visit.
Oh, I
We're on our way.
100% plan on it. So Jen and I learned about this awesome malt at CBC last year in Nashville during their researchers presentation, and Crystal had brought two beers. One was a Belgian double with a gingerbread infused malt, and the other one was a Berliner Weiss, I believe, with a rosemary and thyme infused malt.
Sage and thyme, yeah.
Sage and thyme. And they were amazing. And these beers had no spices added. This is all character from the malt. So luckily I was able to purchase some of the gingerbread malt and brew a beer with it at Pilot. We made a ginger snap cookie blonde ale. I was like 2 packaging days away from being able to bring that beer to the local craft beer conference in North Carolina. And the representative for Prairie Malt, who carries the malt over in America, was really, really hoping that would happen as well. But it was just such a good time to be able to, or so far, be able to share this malt with local brewers here. And people's minds are just blown. They're loving it.
Wow, I loved that beer. It was so good. I was so
Yes.
happy that
I was
John
able.
was able to bring me a can.
Yes, that would make me happy. I was like, I'm going to send you some next week. Thank you for taking it to her. It happened to work out. He was going over there. I'm so happy you got to try it because I
I loved
know
it.
that made me so happy. And we saved some of it. We served at the Rare and Vintage North Carolina Beer Festival this past weekend. And I took the malt with me, and people at the end of the festival, I had a home brewer. I had like a I don't know, 2, 3 pounds worth of it in like a container sitting there so people could like try it and smell it. And he came up and he took out a little plastic Ziploc bag and he was like, "Can I please have some of this malt?" Like it was so funny. And he's like, "I really want to put it in my Russian Imperial Stout." And I was like, "You can take this whole container and you can go put it into your Russian Imperial Stout." And then I gave him a can of it as well because we had some extra. And he just like if don't be surprised if this guy comes knocking on your door in Antwerp because he wants to thank you for making this malt. He was so excited. I had it was
Was it?
amazing. It
Or
was
a real
amazing. What was that?
Was he a home brewer?
Yes, he was. And
Oh,
then
yeah.
we had other it was professional brewers there too. I had another fun story. I had another guy come up. And it gets really busy festivals and people aren't really paying attention, but they're like trying beers. And this guy, he was from another brewery and he came up and got a sample of the beer and then he was talking to his friend and then he put it all together about the malt and the realized what was going on. And he comes rushing over and he's like, "What is this? What is this malt? Where'd you get this? How did this happen?" Like, so I just like had I had a couple extra of the leaflets that you sent me is like the information page about the malt with me. So I was just like, "Here you go, take this." And I was like, and I was like, "Prairie malt, but it expires really soon, so I don't know." And he was like, "Okay, thank you very much." And I was like, it was just amazing the reaction about the beer because it's such no one does this over here, and no one has really seen this. And a couple people had heard about it, but it's a really big deal, and everyone's having a good time. So I need you to please make more gingerbread malt for next year. So I can continue to make these beers because people are like, "Are you going to brew it again?" I'm like, "I don't know. Here is this lady's crystals. Here's her information. Please reach out to her. I'm just kidding. I didn't do
You
that.
totally can do
I
that,
would know. Not your personal. I'll be like, you find her. You tell her. So.
thank you so much for your support and enthusiasm. It absolutely fills me with delight because I mean, when I go to the States, I'm blown away by how enthusiastic the brewers
Yeah.
are. In general, it's just so, it gives me so much energy to be around such positivity for, because this is how I feel. This is like my baby creation, and
Oh
it's
man, I get it.
so cool and innovative, you know, and I'm so excited about it. And I wish that when I was like head brewer, things like this existed that I could,
Oh,
you
yeah.
like, you know, explore and experiment with, and like your creative toolbox just gets like stocked up with new tools to be creative, and who doesn't want that, you know? So it's awesome to see people react the way that you have, Rachel. Thank you.
I'm equally, we are equally delighted. We are just giving each other delightment. Okay, I love it so much. What is next?
Oh, this is like the golden question everyone is asking me right now, because I will be producing the next batch in the next, I'm hoping to do it before our summer. So I actually have a few ideas in mind, and right now I'm just figuring out like the feasibility of
Yeah.
my options. So I don't want to reveal too much
Sure,
because,
sure.
you know, I'm just not sure yet. But yeah, basically I'm either going to go in a fruit direction, like kind of like more citrus forward,
Yeah.
or more like I'm either going to go like fruity, herbally, or more like chocolate coffee directions.
Oh, well, it doesn't matter to me. I'm going to buy it as long as I can. So it's fine.
The gingerbread cookie is going to be fine, by the way, in a year. Yeah, don't worry about the date that's on it. We just have to put a date at packaging,
Oh
but you
yeah?
know.
Okay, good. Well, I'm going to brew something with it anyways for
Totally. Just have a
CBC.
smell and it's still going to
So
be nice and potent.
yeah, okay, that's good to know. Then
Yeah.
I won't
Don't worry about the
All right, good. I won't give it away to someone then that like I was planning
date.
to.
You know, the crazy thing is that the initial test that I did in the micro maltings 4 years ago, they are still absolutely potent and beautiful and lovely. Like they've really lost little to no aroma of flavor. It's absolutely incredible how robustly like flavored these grains have become. It's just like, I think it's actually meshed into this endosperm network, this matrix, and it makes the grain, well, it makes these aroma and flavor compounds able to withstand the kilning phase of the malt house, then
Yeah.
also the mashing phase, the cooking phase,
Yeah.
fermentation, lagering. Like it's incredible, like the roller coaster ride these flavor and aroma compounds go through, and they're still there, like totally visible.
It's just so amazing how it just integrates. Ha ha! Did you get it? Sorry. That
Awesome.
got me. That got me. But it is so cool how it does that, how it just is like becomes one with the malt.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Super
And
cool.
Crystal, what are your batch sizes usually for something like this gingerbread malt that Rachel has?
well, the gingerbread cookie infusion malt was the first industrial batch I did. Prior to that, I was doing in our innovation center, I scaled up to, yeah, I'm having to speak in kilograms. I'm really sorry about that. I
It's
should
okay. Don't worry about it. Our
have.
listeners can do the work.
The initial batches were all incredibly small, like micro maltings, so lab scale. And then I scaled up to 100 kilograms in our pilot malting facility. And then we have another pilot malting facility. It's 1,000 kilograms. So that's like a ton. It's like kind of like a 1.5 pallets of packaged malt. So each of the batches was about that size. And I was just doing a few batches of each because they were like selling quite quickly. But then we saw the need to scale up to our production facility. And so I actually went to one of our smaller facilities on this side of the world. I went to Ireland and I did a 70-ton batch of gingerbread cookie infusion malt, which was
Oh, my
pretty
God.
epic. Like
That is amazing.
the entire village smelled like gingerbread cookie. If you can
Oh
imagine,
my God.
through
Oh.
the kilning phase, and I essentially had to buy all the cinnamon in the world.
That's
Yeah, that was my next question is how do you like with these flavor infusions, what kind of challenges do you face in scaling them up like that?
Well, many challenges actually. I discovered so well. Yeah, sourcing the ingredients was the first time I was sourcing these extreme volumes of spices, and the gingerbread cookie infusion mold actually had six different ingredients added to it. It was mostly cinnamon and ginger, but also I bought a bunch of nutmeg, and then also cloves, allspice, and then my secret ingredient, so don't tell anyone about this, is black pepper, a little bit of black pepper. Just like, grandma's apple pie has a little bit of black pepper. And yeah, I've never had to go and source like masses of cinnamon and things. So that was really difficult. And then the other thing was like getting the right size so that you're able to, because the whole idea is that these flavor and aroma compounds go into the ground and then you remove the spent cinnamon because the cinnamon is essentially devoid of its flavor and aroma compounds. However, in the production context, it was not possible using our current ways of cleaning the kilned mold. It was not possible to remove all of the spices, which was a little bit upsetting because you could still see bits of cinnamon in the mold at the end. And I don't think it's an issue in terms of brewing and like processing and handling of the raw ingredients. But what was a bit more disappointing to me was that people would assume that the flavor and aromas were coming from those chunks that they could visually still see. When actually, like the sophisticated, beautiful thing is no, it's actually in the grain, everyone. It's in the grain. So, next batch, I hope that we're able to improve the operational challenges of removing all of the ingredients that have been added into the malting process. Definitely, that needs a few tweaks to our current ways of cleaning the malt. But yeah, so sourcing the ingredients and then also scaling anything up. You always, it's always a little bit of playing around. Because you don't add 50 times the volume of salt to your big pot of spaghetti bolognese, so it does take a bit of tweaking.
Well, if it makes you feel better as a brewer, when I opened that bag of malt, I was like, oh, this is cool. And because it did, I didn't know exactly that was cinnamon until now, because I was going to ask you. So it looks like it's like cinnamon bark, I guess. It looks really cool, and I did not immediately assume. I didn't even think about it until we were had our, this conversation. But I did not assume that the character was only coming from that cinnamon
Oh,
bark.
that's good.
If
That's
that makes
good.
you feel better, like that didn't even
Thank
cross
you.
my mind, because I reading your information that you provide, it's clear that you're adding a whole bunch of different other things. So it's not like. I assumed, spices are going in there and stuff like that. I did not know it was really in putting itself in all the endosperm and all that. And that is just so scientifically amazing and so interesting. Really, really cool process.
Yeah, that's like the amazing aspect of this infusion malt. Like we actually, even in the information sheet that you've seen, Rachel, I even write in there like I've been able to remove like 98% of all the ingredients that was added. There was so much added into it. I've been able to remove it all, but not all of it. But to an extent, I also think it's nice because people see that it's the real deal, like legitimate spices that I added. This is not just an extract that has been sprayed onto the malt or anything like that. Like a lot of people assume that actually to me, where they smell it, they're like, oh, well, you've just sprayed this with some sort of gingerbread cookie extract. I'm like, no.
No.
With the infusions and like looking at it actually being in, incorporated into the barley. Have you seen a change in like any of like the stats on like the certificate of analysis? Does it change like pH or anything like that that maybe a brewer would need to account for?
Well, actually, that's a really good question. It does have an effect on many things, and every single batch is different. Every infusion I've done so far is different. And all of these sorts of specifications, we do see changes in them. So far, all of the varieties I've done as a base malt, meaning that they still have full diastatic power. But yeah, I, for example, have done citrus infusions where the pH is lower
Makes
because
sense.
of the citrus. Yeah, exactly. And I've also seen really interesting interactions between a lot of these flavor and aroma compounds with various yeast strains, which has actually caused me
Oh,
to
okay.
it's caused me to look a bit more deeply into this in one of the research projects we're doing. But there are many interactions. Like, this is science. It's actually really cool. We even think that there might be a biotransformation happening throughout the malting process, where there's the like development of novel flavor and aroma compounds, even, because somehow 1 + 1 equals 3 when you brew with these malts. It's really incredibly fascinating. But then all of this documentation and these discoveries I make on every batch, I clearly write it down on this note to brewers that I've been doing. Because the brewers, they want to use these new products, they really do, but it's difficult to just start from scratch without any knowledge of how to incorporate these into your recipe. So I do a bunch of tests in the lab. I do a bunch of fermentations. I do a bunch of additions into my grist. And now I put together an information sheet where I give as much of this info to the brewers as I'm able to discover myself, because it's innovation. Like, there is no rhyme nor reason sometimes, you know, like, and if you want to take the risk to do these innovative, exciting things, there are, you know, occasionally there it's going to change the way that you're using your raw ingredients. So I want to help as much as possible, but there are always new discoveries on each of the infusions we've released so far.
Oh yeah. Wait, so you guys brew a lot of beer.
Yeah, I always brew a big batch with
Yeah.
each of the infusions I do.
Wow. What do you do with all that beer?
Actually, I also do a bunch in the lab scale as well, but
Sure.
when I figure out a good ratio for what I want to do, I do a big batch in our 10-hecto brew house. And the beers that we're producing are usually used for like conferences and
Okay, yeah.
things, promotional purposes mostly. So our commercial team will take it out on the road if they're selling malt, and they can say, this is what our brewer brewed with
Sure.
our latest infusion malt, for example. Or we also have like a regeneratively farmed barley. And I always do a pure local, it's called pure local barley, and I always do like a pure local pale ale. And yeah, the sales team just loves to have these like tools to hit the road with, you know.
Yeah, that
Makes a
makes
big
sense.
difference.
You had mentioned earlier you have all these different malt houses that are under, one parent company. So how far is your infusion malt going out? I know you went to Ireland to make this gingerbread. Do you do that a lot? Like, do you go to different places to make bigger batches of, or is that the plan maybe?
That's the plan, exactly.
Yeah.
So I've done it once, and the next one will be coming up right now. I'm actually doing like a feasibility study to see what is the most logical site for our next release. Because
Gotcha.
rather than, you know, like ship to the States, it would be cool if I could just do a batch in the States
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Australia as well, same deal. So I'm looking into making like more regional products
Yeah.
in our various regions would make a lot more sense.
Well, I'm so excited for whatever it is.
And there's already an abundance of research to be done. Like, for example, yeah, you mentioned like this potential biotransformation. I'm looking at that. We also see like promising evidence of prolonged shelf life on these products due to the introduction of like antioxidants, for example.
Oh, that does
So,
make sense. Like spices,
yeah,
exactly. Preservatives.
yeah.
Wow, okay.
And yeah, there's a bunch. In fact, we're actually looking at whether or not we can even start a PhD on the project. So we are not lacking any directions with the research that we have to achieve on this. It's really actually exciting. We're kind of just at the beginning of the journey. The more infusions we produce, the more kind of things we're discovering. But this is just one of the things. We know we have so many cool projects on the go. Infusion malts is just one of the things that we're exploring right now in our innovation center.
And so can you share what else you guys are doing?
Yeah, we're also looking at like we're really curious to malt all sorts of cereals and also pulses like lentils. Lentils is a big thing that we spend a lot of time on. We are malting lentils, and we're looking at diversifying into other areas as well. So where we kind of go beyond brewers and distillers. Brewers and distillers are amazing and they make up the majority of our customers, but there is so much scope to even go further. So we're on a really exciting exploration adventure right now in terms of the future of malting and its application in other industries, as yet uncharted territory. So I mean, it's really exciting. Like, the more we look at getting away from meat and like protein substitutes, malt offers so many solutions to these sorts of
Oh,
needs
that's
that we have.
interesting. Beef infused malt.
It also, like, we also have an extract pilot evaporator here in our innovation center, so we're making all sorts of innovative malt extracts as well. Infusion malt extract is also really cool, but we're
Oh.
also doing other types of extracts as well. So it's I've got the perfect job in the world. It's really an
Yeah, you do.
You know, there's so much to explore in this industry that hasn't been done yet. So we're really on the forefront of
Man, it's just so cool. I'm just geeking out so hard. I'm like
it.
fangirling is what I'm doing. I don't do that. I don't do this often. I'm glad
It's
you
true,
can't
she
see
doesn't. Yeah. No, but I
me.
can tell Rachel has a big smile on her face,
Oh yeah.
even with our cameras off.
Yes. I do. She can hear it in my voice. I just have gotten so much feedback from people who just really love the beer, but like the once you tell them, like, I did not add spices, this is a four ingredient beer, it's just mind blowing, especially for our brewers too. And it's just it was one of our fastest selling seasonals. We released it right before Thanksgiving over time, which is the end of November,
Oh,
and
wow.
it was gone. I still have one keg left on draft, but the cans have been gone for about a month now, and I had to save some special for this festival. And
Oh,
it was great.
wow.
It was great. It's been fantastic, well received. And people are like, "Are you going to brew it again next year?" I'm like, "I hope." But now I am, so I'm so excited.
Oh, that is so cool. And how was the brewing experience?
So we did do a, we have like a 15-gallon small. We call it our co-pilot system because we're pilot brewing. But then we did a small batch of it, and it was very great. First of all, it smelled delicious. It smelled like a gingerbread cookie the whole time you're brewing, which is amazing. And we decided to do a blonde ale because the first brewery I ever worked for is called Hardywood Park, and they're in Richmond, Virginia, and they are very well known for a gingerbread stout that they've made. So I've always told myself I'm not gonna like ever do that, but when I found this malt, I was like, I have to use this malt. So that's why I made this blonde ale, because I'm sorry, I did not want to like step on their toes in any sort of way. However, I would have loved to make a stout. So I just decided on the blonde ale because of that reason. But it was very simple, two row base. I did 10% of the malt bill because, you know, it's a light beer style and I didn't want to overdo it. And then I added also a little bit of biscuit malt because I was trying to go for a ginger snap cookie blonde ale. And
Awesome.
it turned out fantastic. It was so perfect and well, so well received in the tap room. People were hoping we were doing a big batch, which was going to be our plan anyway. So for the big batch, I decided to just up the malt percentage of the gingerbread malt by up to 13%, just by a tad. I also knew that the pitch rate of the yeast would have been a little bit more than that small batch, so I wanted to account for that. And
Yep.
it just came out perfect.
Wow.
I mean, as you know, because you tried it.
13%. It was so, isn't that crazy what an impact that small addition can have?
Yeah. I mean, it was very, it was spot on. It was spot on. And talking
Wow.
with one of the representative of Prairie Malt, he had even tasted a beer from a brewery. I can't remember where the brewery was, but the brewery had made a Scotch ale using 60% of that gingerbread malt. And he said it was delicious. I have heard ranges of, you know, obviously a small addition up to 10 and people throwing in a large amount up to 60 and coming out with a really great product. Sky's the limit, you know?
Totally. Like, I tried a beautiful porter recently that have 5% addition, and then I was talking to some of my colleagues, and they were telling me that one of their customers used 100% because they didn't get the memo, like, to avoid to avoid using 100%. And I thought, oh no, it's just going to be too much. It's going to be a punch in the face. But they were delighted with the result.
Wow. I want to
So,
try 100% on a small batch now.
Yeah, but I mean, 100%. I
Yeah.
advise against using 100% of it because it is so s strong and
Oh, I know.
flavorful.
Now I
So,
just
I
want to
mean,
do it. We did make steeps of it. We had like a malt, we do beer education classes and we had a malt steep class and we made a steep of the gingerbread malt because people tried it along the beer and it was really good. It's just like a
oh,
gingerbread
that's
tea.
cool. Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. Rachel, did you do 100%?
No, of the steep?
Yeah.
Oh man, you know what? I don't think I did actually. Now that I think about it, I probably did not. I probably did 50.
I think in my information sheet, I recommend up to 30% because I did in my gingerbread cookie Belgian double that you tasted in Nashville, it was 40%, and a lot of people told me that they felt that the spice character was really dominant. And then other people w would tell me, like on the same day, it's incredible. Oh, I
Oh
can't
yeah.
really taste the
Right.
spice. Exactly. So, yeah,
I think
it really depends on the individual person.
it's awesome and I don't want to take up too much of your time 'cause I could talk to you all day long. I'm so excited to I hope you keep a I know you will. Keep me in the loop about the next one when you can. I can't wait to
Absolutely.
purchase it and brew with it. I think we're going to have to come see you this summer.
Yeah, I
Oh
was about to say
yes.
we'll let you know shortly when to expect us.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
I need to see
Always welcome.
everything if you don't mind. You know, totally
Yeah.
invade your work life if you don't mind.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Well, thank you so much for doing this with us. Jen, do you have any other questions before? Like, I don't
I
want
think the last question I have for you, Crystal, is if our listeners want to learn more about this innovation malt, where should they visit? What website? Oh, that's a great question. Actually, our website, we actually have, if you just go to our normal Bort Malt website, and it's spelled BORTMALT, Bort Malt, .com, then there you can link to our other craft brands and things. But also, I have an Instagram account, Bort Malt Innovation Center. And then, yeah, our Bort Malt, the infusion malt is sold under our local brand here in Belgium, which is Belgamalt, BelgoMalt, Belgamalt. But all of this is like all of our socials are connected to one another, so it should be pretty straightforward to find. Also, any questions, technical questions, or questions about obtaining the malt, you can always reach out and ask me. And yeah, I don't know if I can list my emails somewhere on
Sure.
your
You can say it right now if you want to.
Okay, well, it's just my name, which is CRISTAL, then it's full stop, and then my last name, PECK, Peck, Crystal dot Peck at bortmalt.com. I'm always happy to answer the more technical questions. And if it's more to do with like getting the malt, I can give the correct
Yeah.
way to do that as well.
That's
Excellent. Thank you so
fantastic.
much. I just followed your innovation account on Instagram, so I
Oh,
appreciate you
awesome.
sharing that.
Oh, yeah.
And
That's
when this
cool.
episode comes out, you'll probably just like all of a sudden get these notifications of
Oh,
followers.
yeah.
And so that's always for me when I do interviews and stuff. That's usually like my indication that the interview has gone live, is that I'll suddenly just get like random follows, like in one day. Oh man, I really need to do a post then, don't I? It's today. I'm like down in the lab one day, down the brewery one day. I'm like, oh, social media. Yeah,
Yeah.
it takes a lot of time, doesn't it? Right, it really does.
I just got a personal Instagram like 2 weeks ago, if it makes you feel better. I was letting everybody work through the kinks of Instagram first, and then I decided now was the time.
Oh, good.
Just
Oh,
kidding.
great. I'll start following you then.
I love
Thank
it.
you guys so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure to chat to you.
Yes,
Thank you,
this was
Crystal. It's been amazing.
such a great way to start my day. I'm so excited. Thank you again. I will stop fangirling. I won't stop, but
I
stop right
look
now.
forward to seeing you guys again in real life as well, wherever that may be, in
Oh, yeah.
Antwerp or America somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Well,
Charlotte.
yes, please. You can come to Charlotte anytime you want. I will be seeing you in Antwerp for sure.
Cool.
Awesome.
Thank you everyone for listening. You can find us on social media at False Bottom Girls.
You can email us at falsebottomgirls.com and or at gmail.com, and you can also visit our website, falsebottomgirls.com. Crystal, thank you again so much for joining us today. This has been a great interview. And yeah, like I'm already planning to have Rachel look up flights for us as soon as we're finished here.
Awesome. Thank you.
This has been False Bottom Girls,
and we make the Bruin world go round.